Good morning, listeners, to the BT Global Challenge. This is the first in a series of live interviews that will be going out over the website over the next few days. This is Robin Haynes from the BT Global Challenge project, and with me this morning is Adrian Rayson, the manager of the race office. We're here in the media centre in Ocean Village in Southampton on this lovely Monday morning, just 2 days before the fleet is due to arrive back after their 30,000-mile circumnavigation of the world. Adrian is here to talk to all of us about he and his team have been working on this project. Adrian, if you would please, could you briefly outline the role of the race office in the BT Global Challenge?
Well, what the race office has been doing since the start of the race is to monitor very closely the fleet of the BT Global Challenge and to report back to the race organisers, to the sponsors, and of course put the information out into the public domain. That is our primary role. We've had various subsidiary roles, but the primary role, as I say, is to monitor the fleet very closely. That involves getting their positions, the yacht positions back, and also dealing with the messages that we get back from the yachts, and indeed from the messages that come from the shoreside out to the yachts. Those messages in the main are messages to do with the technical side of things, because the personal messages from the crew to their families and things tends to go through the individual sponsors.
How's the race office staffed, Adrian?
Well, I'm the race office manager, so I sort of overview the operations of the race office. And we have three race officers who do the watchkeeping. Three race officers. We have Anne Priest, who's ex-Royal Navy, ex-Coast Guard. She's a very experienced watchkeeper. She's been doing it for years. In fact, she has been a watchkeeper on other major round-the-world races and is about to be again. And she's a very experienced sailor in her own right. We then have Liz Botting, who, again, very experienced sailor and is very well connected with the sailing fraternity, both in the UK and overseas. And in fact, very usefully, she is an international sailing judge in her own right. And so she's been working also as the international jury clerk, which has been a useful role for her to play in the race office. And then we have Paul White, who is a professional skipper, both on the chartering and teaching side. He's a sailing instructor. He was a race officer on the previous challenge race, in fact, the British Steel Challenge in 92-93. So that's the team: Anne Priest, Liz Botting, Paul White, and myself.
Okay, that's lovely. That's the people involved. Now, obviously, this is a very high-tech adventure. Could you tell us a little bit about the actual layout of the race office and the equipment used, please?
We have a position at the top of a building in Southampton in the UK, overlooking Southampton Water. In fact, we can look at finish line is, which is will be very nice. In fact, we've been monitoring the fleet all the way around the world on the computers, and suddenly for the last few miles we'll be able to actually see them on the water, which would be a great thrill. If one were to walk into the race office, one would see it looks remarkably like any other office, really, in that it's various desks with PCs on them. But of course, that hides a rather more sophisticated layout. Basically, what we have in the office is six or seven PCs. We have a communications pad which connects the yachts, connects the race office with the land earth stations around the world, with which we use to communicate with the satellites. We have the fax database servers, we have the internet servers, so we're really a pretty strong nodal point for all the technology.
Has the equipment actually stood up to the early expectations? Has it all worked well, or have you had some problems with it?
No, it's all worked extremely well, and it's to its enormous credit. The thing about the technology is that it does a very sophisticated job, but the front end of it, the end that we race officers use, is relatively straightforward, and that's an enormous to great credit of the people who put it together at BT, the technical people at BT Labs in Martlesham, because, as I say, it does a sophisticated job, but it does it at the front end in a simple way, because we race officers are computer literate in an ordinary sort of way, but it meant that when we came to do the training, we were able to concentrate on the ethos of the race and the actual release of data, rather than having to learn how to actually press the buttons and all that sort of thing on the terminals. So that worked very well.
Okay, that's lovely. Thank you for that. What has been the actual technology used to monitor the fleet whilst they've been going around the globe?
We've been using Inmarsat-C satellites combined with GPS on board the yachts. GPS is Global Positioning System. What that is a very accurate navigation system run using 22 satellites in orbit around the world. And what they do is triangulate with the equipment on board the yacht to produce a position of any individual yacht around the world very accurately, down to less than 50 meters. What we therefore use is an Inmarsat-C satellite system to communicate with the GPS on the yachts. Inmarsat have a number of services that they can offer. Inmarsat-C is one of the more basic ones, but it suits the nature of this race absolutely. It's a text-based service which enables us to get text messages back and forth to the yachts, as I was saying earlier. But it also allows us to communicate with that GPS on each of the individual yachts. It's relatively cost efficient and it's relatively simple. How we communicate with the satellites, there are four satellites on the Inmarsat-C system in geostatic orbit around the world. There's two in the Atlantic, Atlantic East and Atlantic West. There's one over the Pacific and there's one over the Indian Ocean. And we have at various times during this race, of course, communicated with all of them. The race office communicates with the Inmarsat-C satellites through land-earth stations, and we've been able to use just two land-earth stations. Goonhilly in the west of England has been communicating with Atlantic East and Atlantic West satellites, and Sentosa in Singapore has been communicating with the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean. So that's how we do it.
A lot of information clearly is coming in to your office via the various stations. Can you tell me what information has actually been released to the public, and how have you actually gone about doing that?
We have various mediums that we use to get the information out into the public domain. The internet, of course, on which we're speaking now, has been a very major influence on this race, and has been the major difference between the previous challenge race in 92-93 and this race, the BT Global Challenge now, is that in 92-93 the internet was really in its infancy and it was not something that came into play. Now it's of huge significance, but we don't only use the internet. Not everybody is yet familiar with surfing the net, and so we also have a fax database system whereby all the information, charts, tables, location lists and so on and so forth, get put onto a fax database, and that affords people the opportunity with a fax machine to poll into the fax server and pull off whatever information they want. But also we have in the UK at least, we have a public information telephone line, and we also have a public information bureau that people can phone into and actually speak to somebody about what's going on the race. And then CFAX on British television also puts out a page showing the positions of the yachts. But as I say, the major outlet into the public domain is the internet, and of course, if you're listening to this, you'll be familiar with what the web page has got to offer.
If we can just focus for a while now on the actual yacht racing itself, how has that been throughout the BT Global Challenge?
It's been a very good race indeed. One yacht in particular, Group 4, has, if not exactly dominated, then they've certainly been very efficient in their racing and have won four out of the five legs that have finished and are presently leading in the sixth leg, and will, if they finish in good order in the next 48 hours or so, be the overall winners. But having said that, within the fleet there's been some very close racing indeed, and even as we speak, in fact, the yachts are 350 miles out from the finish line, at least the leaders are, and within the body of the fleet, from about 4th to about 12th, there's only 25 miles between them. So The racing around the world has been very close, very exciting, and well worth keeping in touch with.
A lot of very close racing. Could you tell us about the conditions faced by the crews on the various legs? Clearly, everybody who's been following the race will have heard of the appalling Southern Ocean conditions. Could you comment on these?
Yeah, well, let's go through it. The first leg was it's not true to say that it's a shakedown leg, but the challenge. Protocols for these races are very good indeed, in fact, because what they do is that they train all the crews up before they go, and they get very good training. But the one thing that they can't replicate, of course, is what it is to be 30 days on the yacht going down to the first port of call. And so what the first leg does is to give crews that experience and give them the experience of living on the boat and working with the boat and so on and so forth. So the first leg, it's a tropical leg. They go down over the equator and through the doldrums and down to Rio de Janeiro. That was pretty straightforward. A lot of it was downwind, spinnaker stuff. A good sort of leg, really. The second leg is really the big one. Second leg on the BT Global Challenge was from Rio de Janeiro to Wellington in New Zealand. And the reason that it's a big one is because it's pretty long, and also it's their first visit to the Southern Ocean, and also it encompasses Cape Horn, of course, which means that the fleet have to go down further south than they go for the rest of the race, and Cape Horn is the sailor's Everest, really, if you like. On this race, there was some pretty exciting stuff going down the coast of South America. In fact, Time and Tide, the disabled boat, led the fleet for 24 hours, which was very exciting for all of us who are supporting that boat. Going through the Southern Ocean, there were, in fact, one or two problems with some of the rigs on the boats, which got sorted out, but at some stage something went wrong because Concert, one of the yachts, unfortunately lost their mast altogether. And it was to the enormous credit of the fleet, in fact, that when you're down there in the Southern Ocean, the only effective help really is going to be gained from within the fleet itself. There's no third-party help really that can get down there. And to their enormous credit, they all pulled together. They didn't stop racing or anything like that, but as Concert came through, they assisted her. She was motoring, of course. They assisted her, and she got to Chatham Island in good order, where she was sorted out and then motored on to Wellington. So anyway, when they got to Wellington, it was just after Christmas. In fact, the first boat arrived on New Year's Eve, so that was a very good time to arrive, and parties, furious parties, were had, of course, all the way through. Wellington is like the sort of the main pit stop, if you like, for the race. All the boats come out of the water and get a thorough check over. All the rigs come out, a lot of gear is taken off, sorted out, and put back on again. Leg three was a quick short sprint from Wellington to Sydney, 1,200 miles. It was kind of the executive leg. We had one or two eminent people on board. His Royal Highness Prince Michael of Kent was on board Ocean Rover, and Dr. Alan Rudge, Deputy Chief Executive of BT, was on board Global Teamwork. So it was an intriguing leg, and there were other people, senior people from sponsoring companies on the various yachts. Then Sydney to Cape Town, leg four, that really was a big one. It's not the longest by any means, about 6,500 miles, but they have to go through the Southern Indian Ocean, and the Southern Indian Ocean, rather than the Southern Pacific Ocean, is a really tough place, in fact. And the fleet was forced by westerly winds well down south. They got into a big ice field and so on and so forth. We were carefully monitoring them, obviously, and giving them ice information that we were getting from the Americans and so on and so forth. But these are the waters where the likes of Tony Bullimore and Dinelli and people like that in the Vendée Globe came unstuck. So pretty tough stuff. So by the time they got to Cape Town, I think they felt that they'd kind of done the Southern Ocean. Then there was the longest leg. Leg five is the longest leg, was from Cape Town to Boston, and that was quite tough for entirely different reasons, completely the opposite reasons, in fact. It's all tropical sailing, a lot of work under spinnaker, hot conditions. You get into the doldrums, where it can be pretty depressing when you're trying to move the boat along and she simply won't go. And then they got into the trade winds, which bashed them about a bit before they got to Boston. So they had a bit of everything on leg four. And it was a long leg, and I think it was quite tough. Leg five, this was, of course. And then now they're on the last leg, Boston to Southampton. That's something of a sprint. It's 3,000 miles. They left Boston going very well indeed. They then slopped around a bit in not much wind for two or three days near the Grand Banks, lots of fog and all that sort of thing. But for the last 4 days or so, they've been going very well indeed, and still are as they approach the English Channel and coming home. So that's the race so far.
The conditions, as you mentioned, have varied wildly. This must clearly have its effect on both skipper and crew. How's the morale been like on board?
Morale's been pretty good, actually. Obviously, I mean, I'm bound to say that, aren't I? But it has been, really. I mean, these people are on the greatest adventure of their lives. They've paid a lot of money to be there. They're getting their money's worth every inch of the way. The racing has been close, so I think the event has gone very well indeed, and crew morale is very good. And obviously, with their arrival in Southampton within the next 48 hours, the messages that we're getting back from the yachts are all very upbeat indeed, and I think there's going to be some serious partying when they get back.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there will be. You mentioned a little while ago Time and Tide, the first fully disabled crew to have ever circumnavigated the globe. How have they fared compared to the other yachts?
Well, they've done very well indeed. I did mention that coming down the South American coast during the beginning of leg two, they actually led the fleet. At other times, they have done longest runs of the day and so on and so forth. And so they're in very good shape indeed, and one has to take one's hat off to them enormously. They have had their special difficulties. It's wrong to sort of say write them off as disabled. They're not disabled at all. They just have things that make tasks slightly more difficult for them at times. But they've done tremendously well. They're in good shape. They've been a very significant part of this race, and this race would have been the poorer for not having them around.
Okay, if we can have a look very briefly now at the finish, because clearly they're only now a few days away. Could you tell us when are they due to finish, and where is the finish line? Because obviously people are going to want to come and see the finish.
Well, the way we are at the moment, the yachts are due to get into Southampton starting at about midday on Wednesday the 16th of July, and then they'll be coming in through the night in the UK, this is, of Wednesday the 16th, Thursday the 17th, with the majority of the yachts coming in early morning Thursday the 17th. Time and Tide are presently bringing up the rear, and they're due in Thursday the 17th evening. This is of course subject to the weather staying as it is. At the moment they're running downwind under spinnaker with about 15 to 20 knots of westerly wind. This is scheduled to stay with them as they come up the English Channel, but I mean, looking out the window this morning here in Southampton, one has to say there isn't a great deal of wind, but then you know, it's what the forecast says, not necessarily what the weather says at the moment. In terms of where the finish line is, it's in Southampton in the UK. It's up the top of Southampton Water, and the place where the yachts come after the finish is Ocean Village in Southampton, and I would urge people, if they can get to Ocean Village in Southampton, to come down and see the yachts. It will be a wonderful spectacle, and BT, the sponsors, have put some a fabulous show together here with all the technology on display, and there'll be a concert and various partying going on, and it's going to be a great show.
Yeah, you mentioned it's major party time, and quite right after 10 months at sea. What is actually going on in Ocean Village at the moment for the public, crews, families, and invited guests?
Well, as I say, there's a lot of technology here. One can come down here and surf the internet. One can come down here and watch the BT Global Challenge race results system in action. One can go around and hands-on look at some of the technology that's on the boat, and also some of the layout of the boat and so on and so forth. There's also various hospitality areas and so on and so forth. And also on Friday night there will be a concert and a personality and so on. So there's an awful lot for everybody to do, and it's all happening during the day of Friday. Friday the 18th is the big day for the celebration of the arrival back of the fleet. So I would really encourage people, as I say, if they can get down here, to get down here.
Well, I think that's an absolutely fascinating insight we've had from Adrian this morning on all aspects of the race, from the race office all the way through now to the finish and the festivities. And it just really leaves it for me to echo the sentiments of Adrian, that if you can actually get down here, then do, because Southampton really is the place that you should be. Okay, thank you very much, Adrian.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.